Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Shake them ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. I'm eschewing the usual introduction. I'll tell you why in a second.
I'm going for a James Bond sort of presence here, like James Bond villain.
It's more Blofeld, like, yeah.
Yeah, Blofeld. Ernst Stavril Blofeld.
That's a terrible... By the way, we're talking twisted movies. That was a terrible twist. Inspector. Yeah, we're...
Yeah, yeah.
Stepbrother. Bobo the Wonder Chimp, producer Bobo, really good week this week. He took an old 401k of his that was kind of a throwaway that he didn't want to roll over and had 20 grand in it a couple years ago and bought 2,000 shares worth of Palantir. And hit 110 today. He had bought it for 750.
So it Bobo, hit 110 today?
Yeah. All right, it hit 115. It's down to 110 today.
Really?
Yeah.
Last I saw it, it was like in the 20s.
Yeah. It blew up after earnings because the government has a lot of contracts with.
Oh, yeah. Well, there we go. The first big winner in the new era.
Well, Bobo's retirement fund. Very, very happy. Meaning my brothers, because after I die, it's me, I'm Bobo. Anyways, Vader Club this week, Diamond Dallas Page versus Randy Savage from Great American Bash 97?
97, yeah.
Yep, okay, yep. Thank you. Get to that in a second. I'll tell you why.
Rated 3.75 in my continue war against star ratings critique.
Oh, speaking of which, great segue. This is why I did not do the, hey guys, do you like professional wrestling? We like professional wrestling too. This was almost the week, Chris. This is almost the week where I started. This is the last Shake Them Ropes. I'll give you kids an example. I've been having, I made the mistake of reading the comments, but after Royal Rumble, press scrum going on, a lot of people in the commentary at complaining that the questions that they wanted asked weren't being asked and that the questions about the Janelle Grant lawsuit weren't being asked of Hunter. And you had to try. And, you know, you had to at least ask to get these standard, we do not talk about ongoing litigation stuff, because the lawsuit was amended on Friday, Royal Rumble ended up on Saturday. And here was my sarcastic quip. People who are content creators pretending to be reporters at a fake press conference need to ask uncomfortable questions when their presence there is for the purpose of creating content to advertise the company that gave them access. People are ridiculous. And then I followed that up with a quote tweet that said, the dude who asked Nia and Bailey about BBLs, which is short for Big Booty Latinas, which happened, Bailey cut the second best promo of her life about that, is apparently supposed to turn into Mike Wallace post-Rumble. So that happened. And then I went to the Voices of Wrestling Discord. There's a channel there. It used to make fun of Louis Danger. Now I believe it makes fun of Chris Featherstone. But it's all about basically trashing people in wrestling media who are out there creating content like us and like Voices of Wrestling. Although not with Voices of Wrestling. Because the Voices of Wrestling people are in the Voices or in that channel. Anywho, it became stuff like Jeff Hawkins is an apologist for sex trafficking. And it sounds like Jeff is defending the company. And other and then it spiraled into how people don't listen to my show, and that's fine. I don't care about that. I care about you guys or anybody ascribing ulterior motives to what I'm saying. So let me be clear. My point is there is a time and place for everything, and these people aren't real journalists, and this isn't a real press conference, which I brought up also, and they go, well, yeah, but sexual assault is real. Okay, cool. But my point is these people have fun making their dopey little TikTok videos, and I'm friends with a lot of them. I go on a lot of their podcasts. I'm cool with that, and yeah, that colors my opinion, and I know you guys don't care, and I'm going to get into that in a second. But they're there to have fun as guests of the company. I don't expect them to either have the wherewithal or the gravitas to look Triple H in the eye at a place where they've been invited, which it might be the thrill of their life, to then go, hey, Michael Hayes was named in the amended complaint. Can you comment on that? And there's a weird expectation that they're supposed to. Denise Salcedo is not going to do that kind of stuff. Because she makes money doing this. And that's fine, and you can excuse her. But the other guys aren't making a lot of money. This is just kind of the thrill of access. Which, by the way, is the entire point of that channel on the Discord. Whereas they're getting access to wrestlers, you're getting access to Joe Lanza and Rich Craich. And hoping for the attaboy. You nerds. Anyways, I'll pause there, Chris, in case you have a comment.
Yeah, you loop me in on this stuff. I'll be honest. I, broadly speaking, don't care a whole hell of a lot about what people have to say about me at this point.
Yeah, I made a mistake of reading the comments. That's my fault.
Yeah, but I guess I'll say one thing. I think it is particularly weak to say, I am glad I don't do blank. Whether it's I don't listen to a podcast, I don't watch this TV show, I don't listen to this band, I don't read this book, I don't hang out with these people, I don't go to this building on this day, whatever it is, I think it's unbelievably weak and lame to be glad about that. It's nothing affirmative. It's like, you know, oh, I'm so glad that I'm not eating, you know, trash out of a trash can.
It's easy to
That's a low bar in life to set for yourself.
Well,
I have more things to say, Jeffrey.
All right.
So then, if you're glad that you don't listen to this show, shut the hell up about it. You have nothing to say about it. You don't care. You don't care what I have to say. And if you're aggrieved about what I'm saying right now, well, you ruined your own happiness and your own gladness by listening to this show in the first place, a show that you espouse to not be, or to be glad to be free of. Always a choice. You can always change the channel. That's what's so lovely about this. But then let's talk about these press conferences. What do you people who want something more out of these press conferences want out of these press conferences? Do you want this to become a few good men where you get the general to say, you're goddamn right, I ordered the code red, and then what? And then what? Think about all the various times in recent years, you can look at news and current events or whatever else you'd like, where an artist has said stuff, an individual has said things that would seemingly be career ending. I remember once, I'll give an example here that's a different one than what we were talking about before the show. John Mayer, years ago, gave this interview to Playboy, Jeff. I don't know if you remember this, where he, among other things in Playboy magazine, said that he had a Benetton heart and a David Duke cock. That is an exact quote of John Mayer. Go and look it up. And that
what?
should No, by all means. He actually says, among other things, my dick is a white supremacist. These are real John Mayer quotes. The man still has a career. So let's imagine you're the journalist and you get them to say that. Then what? John Mayer's still working. You're not actually changing the game in the way that you think you're changing the game, even if you get the most damning of quotes. And you're hard-pressed to come up with better ones than that, right? Those should be career enders, right, Jeff? Like, you would think, perhaps at a time, and this was 10, 15 years ago, that this would be career-ending. It's not. So suppose you got this out of the press conference. Would it really go the way you want it to go? Would this really move the needle on the case? But then beyond that, remember that this is all a stunt. This is on WWE cameras. Yes. This is not a press conference. This is the magic act of a press conference.
Yes.
This is an imitation of a press conference. Like, this isn't real. These are not real journalists, and this is not a real press avail.
And
people answering the questions don't think they're going to be getting real journalistic questions. They're not of a disposition to give real journalistic answers. And if you did do something like that, you'd just get into trouble. I don't think it really matters. And then lastly, though this court case with Janelle Grant should be a criminal court case, let's not forget that it's a contract dispute.
Thank you.
The things that you want out of this press conference are things that would move the needle in a criminal case. They aren't things that are going to move the needle, particularly in a contract dispute.
Yes.
So once again, you've misunderstood the text. But you don't listen to the show in the first place, and you're glad you don't. So go ahead and complain about it now.
You took a little bit of my thunder on the contract, but I'll get into that, because it's one of those things where Rich Craich, God bless him, came at me respectfully and asked, do I not think it's important? I didn't quite answer his question. I gave the response about the, you know, who do you want handling that type of thing? And my answer overall is, while I find sexual assault and stuff like that important, I don't find it. I worked at a big law firm for 20 years. I've reading nothing but these types of filings. For you, some of you, it's the most gross, harshest, horrible thing you've ever read. For me, it was Tuesday, to quote Bison from Street Fighter, the movie, okay? It was salacious, but it was intended to be salacious because the lawyer is telling you a story and is trying to emotionally manipulate people into then opening it up and overturning it. It's a story. It's not necessarily the story, but look, I believe
a lot. I think it's a good strategy too, right? Complete the criminal with the contract. Essentially say there's so much obviously criminal going on here that at minimum, please at least re-examine the contract here. We have a good enough contract argument. It's designed to be a needle mover.
It's a highly skilled story. Don't get me wrong on that, but it's not something that I get emotionally involved in. It's also one of those things where it's like, I forgot my other tract, but I'll probably find it eventually somewhere here.
Can you, just for the sake of listeners, explain what you mean when you say you don't get emotionally involved in it? Because I think that maybe an uncharitable read of that would say you're unmoved by it. So what do you mean when you say you don't get emotionally involved in it?
A few different things. Number one, working in law, you read a lot of filings and a lot of horrible things happen to people and a lot of terrible things that corporations do. I am a little bit numbed by it. I will admit that. But I also have not been emotionally involved in professional wrestling as a company or a thing since 1987 or so. I've always grown up with hating Vince McMahon. I don't think he's a good person. So for people to be shocked that he was this bad of a person, I'm the guy who always thought of Vince McMahon as the guy who took a briefcase full of money and got Jimmy Snuka off of murder. Okay. I don't think anybody finds him necessarily redeeming in any sorts. And it's one of those things where you hear the emotional plea of it. And I guess there are people who like him. There is a certain amount of cognitive dissonance in being a wrestling fan. in that, at least when I was growing up, it wasn't something that kids did after school as a fun activity for team building and whatnot. It was beer drinking ex-jocks who didn't want to give you the secret of professional wrestling because it was afraid they were gonna put it in their coffers and take away money from them, so they'd break your arm to see if you were on the first day to see if you'd come back because you wanted it enough. It's a scummy business. It's one of these weird things to me where to me at least, I don't get emotionally involved with it because it's lawyering. And this is what lawyering is supposed to do. And so, because I've hung around lawyers for so long, yes, it's a horrible story. But I also take kind of the guts from Charlie Wilson's War, the Zen Master story. We'll see. We'll see what the other side says. I don't think WWE is a great company in any stretch of the imagination. But people eat sausage, and I don't want to see how the sausage is made too. I think you have to have a certain amount of cognitive dissonance to be a wrestling fan. And this is why I also just can't you believe what WWE did? They are such a terrible company. They covered up sex trafficking. Of course they did. It's the company type of a thing. It's something where it's like it none of this is unexpected to me, Chris. I might be rambling a bit. It's a combination of all these things. And it's just one of those things where it's like, I understand you're angry, but as you got to again, it's a contract law dispute for me. It's not the trial. It's not him. He hasn't admitted anything. And I think that's what they really want is, I want you to admit you're a bad person. We finally got him on this one type of a thing,
Oh, well, I mean, look, if you're looking for guilty in the court of moral opinion, yeah,
dead
Vince
on.
McMahon, he's been guilty of
Dead
that
on.
since snooker,
Yes.
as you said earlier. I mean, and this is just further evidence of it. And it does this make WWE look like a bad company? Yes, but they also advertise for the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia openly and regularly on their show and ever intensify that relationship. So it's like, I don't know. Even that's not a big revelation to me. And then it's like, okay, what if in a press conference they got grilled about Saudi Arabia more? What then? What would change? It's unclear to me.
And here was the part that here's where it made me a little bit angry at that channel. Because they have no emotional investment in either the people who do this content creation, and they also don't partake in WWE, and that's a personal choice, and I'm cool with that. But it's like, well, we don't care about those people who you'd have to go do this, losing access or whatever. They don't even like the stuff that they produce. And for me, I'm a little bit more empathetic towards them because I could be a hater too and say I don't like their stuff, and I don't necessarily like their stuff, but they're having fun. They're doing this. They've always wanted to be in the wrestling business or whatever, and this is their chance. And WWE saying, "Yeah, we'll do the free advertising, and you can use our people to prop up whatever the hell you're doing." And it's a mutually arranged thing for people. And I could be the guy with his arms crossed going, "Why would you ask that kind of question to somebody when you have 30 seconds to ask them?" et cetera, et cetera. Or I can let people have their fun and do it. Like, that's the difference to me in terms of a actual like working example of the difference right now in wrestling companies. The people at WWE are going there to do their yeeting and to have fun and to cheer and boo and whatnot. And the AEW fans are have their arms crossed, waiting for the chance to say this is awesome or whatever, and being a bit judgy and being quiet when it doesn't affect them, and their fandoms and the tribalism. It's one of these things where the tribalism is killing people's inner mental concierge, so to speak, kind of in terms of that. It's like, I'm not gonna fault someone who grew up a fan of WWE and wants to make dopey videos of their kid asking Nia Jax questions, like my friend who is the father of World Wrestling Kid. I'm not gonna say that person is participating in the sex trafficking of a person. All right? I'm just not.
So,
go
oh,
ahead, sorry.
I guess what I would say to anyone who is listening to the show, and if you're glad you're not listening to the show right now, I'm happy for you. I'm glad that you're glad. But if you are listening to the show, I guess what I would submit is that if you broadly don't like something, it massively hinders your ability to offer insightful critique on it. So I don't like football. I could watch a football game and maybe have something about the defense or passing or whatever, but like I don't care. And my apathy towards the subject, my inability to enjoy it at all, limits and hinders my ability to offer meaningful critique of the text that I'm attempting to engage with. If I was the same thing with a band, for example, Nickelback, they can't write a song I like. So if you're asking me to critique it, I don't have a ton of insight. Or same thing with like 80s power pop ballads. I hate all of them as a blanket statement. So if you're asking me to like parse the nuances of Foreigner's Waiting for a Girl Like You
Oh, God.
versus, I know, right? Like versus a ballad. Like, but no, right? Like exactly. You
Actually, I
immediately.
want to know what love is. It's much worse. So I'll
Right,
take Waiting for a
right.
Girl
But
Like You.
like, I hate all of those songs profoundly. So it really limits my ability to sit there and get into the lines and measures of the thing.
All right,
And
but here's my question though. Do you use your hatred of football to cast the fans of football with a morality to then prop your own personal superiority?
I mean, no.
Thank you. No, that's all you need. That's
No.
all I want to hear. It's like those people hate football, so those people are inherently dumber than I am, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean,
I
that's
mean,
the
conversely, if someone told me that they had a profound love for 80s power pop ballads like the ones we just described, I'm sure that would elicit a damn from me or some sort of reaction.
I like 80s boomer rock though, Chris, so I don't know where you're
I'm
going
talking
with
about the crappy Yamaha DX7 piano ballads with the bad, yes, with the bad electric piano and everything.
Boston's Amanda. You're not a big
Yeah,
fan of
like, right. No, that's what I'm talking about. So, and again,
Hold on, the hair. Hold on, are we talking like rock band pop ballads of the 80s or the hair metal ballads of the
I was
80s?
talking more like rock bands, like your Bad Companies, your Foreigners,
Okay.
Boston. Like all the like
REO
REO Speedwagon,
Speedwagon, Journey.
exactly. Yep. Yes, exactly. The most watered down ballady ones of all of those bands. Like if someone told me that that's what they liked, I'm you're I to be fair, no. If someone said football, no, I'm not gonna be condescending. If someone said 80s power ballads like those, I don't know, Jeff. I mean I'm a man with an open heart and an open mind, but that's really pushing it.
And I think a lot of my empathy is because, like, in my 20s, look, I was a snob. I was a comedy hater of people. I was the guy on the alt comedy stand-up joining in on the Carrot Top's a horrible human being because he only does prop comedy, so he's unoriginal. And people shouldn't sell out to do movies and stuff like that. David Cross used to be big onto that. He was the big, these people doing movies are selling out comedy, blah, 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 blah. And then David Cross decided he wanted a big farmhouse in upstate New York. You were
Yeah.
signaling me there.
No. I was saying that he wanted to go up to New York there. Like,
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it to me, it's just like if you don't, for example, Carrot Top or Gallagher, I mean, if you don't enjoy the show at all, you couldn't tell me, you wouldn't be able to say with any sort of qualitative analysis what's the good Carrot Top special versus the bad Carrot Top special.
Right.
And that's what I'm saying is your broad anyone's broad inability to enjoy whatever thing X it is
Yes, yes.
immediately hinders and impairs to the point of paralyzes your ability to offer useful criticism
You
on the
can,
thing.
yeah, you can not like something and not be the turd in the punch bowl because you like something, art house movie fans versus, people who like the big loud blockbusters with special effects. They're both movies.
Or like, I guess what I'd say is if you don't like Meltzer, for example, not picking on Dave for any particular reason, but if you don't like Dave, right, then that's it. Your commentary is, well, I don't really care for Meltzer. You probably should water's edge it at that and not go over your skis and explore frontiers that you shouldn't.
Like journalistic standards or something to that effect, where it's like you don't really know all that much and you don't know what he's doing and you don't know, you know, his motives and everything like that. It's, you know, it's that cool kid, Sean Rassap isn't a great journalist. He never said he was. So-and-so's doing this. So-and-so's doing that. So-and-so's doing... Okay, great. What are you doing? Get off the couch. Get into the arena. Shut up.
Right. And if you can't produce some sort of quote to support your initial jumping off point, especially if it's a strong claim like so-and-so is not doing journalistic whatever, you might want to stop before
it's
you even start penning.
It's professional wrestling.
Yeah. And then also remember that this is professional wrestling. And a lot of the people, you know,
it's a job based on lies and deceit. And go ahead, sorry.
No, a lot of us don't even get paid for this. Or
no, we're doing this out of the kindness of our heart to analyze wrestling. Speaking of which, the same Voices of Wrestling Discord. I went to the WWE channel. Jey Uso won the Royal Rumble. He's going to be headlining main eventing WrestleMania, allegedly.
He will go into WrestleMania as the Royal Rumble winner is the way I prefer to
That
frame
is
it.
How I would prefer it, too. I think it might be a story point, but nevertheless, the talk of his work rate was coming up and how the match is going to suck, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I am here to tell the work rate, fellas, that work rate is a path to getting over. The point of professional wrestling, Chris, is to get over and make money. And work rate is a combination of technical skill and pace and whatnot to extract an emotional reaction from you, the viewer, much like catchphrases, much like promos, much like anything else. Work, and it's been somehow turned into a thing to be judged and compared, etc., etc., when it has always been a path. Some of the worst workers in the world were some of the most over wrestlers. I hate to tell you people that, and I hate to say that people say that they go too much on, well, the business has evolved, and this is what it, blah, 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 blah. You watched that Monday Night Raw with the entire crowd yeeting, and you go, yeah, that's the reason why He won the Royal Rumble and no other. I'm sorry. It's just one of these things where maybe I've just gotten old and I'm just like cool with a lot of things that I may not have been cool with before, or I'm just really easygoing about my wrestling criticism, but I'm like, he's over. Let's see what he can do, guys.
Okay. You said no other reason. I got to stop you. What family is he genetically related to? Do they have any sort of input in the company, influence of the company? Do we think perhaps his push and his profile would even this opportunity?
Is this perhaps nepotism? Is that what you were saying?
I'm saying that Jey Uso is very talented, but slow your roll, homie. Like, no, yeah, obviously I this is a bit of a family job.
He's not my cup of tea. I don't think he's I don't think he's a guy. Let's put it this way. I don't think he is a marquee face of the company wrestler.
And yeah, he feels like a quite a quintessential upper mid-card guy.
He feels like Hangman to me in many ways, but everybody got mad at me for saying that because Hangman does great wrestling. It's like, okay, but Jey Uso's more over.
Yeah, and his character's been more consistent, and people just seem... It's not even just being over with the catchphrase. People seem to be connected with him.
Yes, in a there's way. An emotional thing there for some reason.
Yeah, and they like
the chase.
Jay.
The chase. Yeah. They like the chase with him, and I don't get it because to me it's more of a Sami Zayn story to tell, and it'd probably be a little bit better as a Sami Zayn story. But also, Roman Reigns explicitly said, part of this whole bloodline deal is to get my family members over as individuals. So we're doing it.
Yeah, and we're doing it. And
we have plenty of other matches that'll scratch the itches of everybody else. I mean, this to me is like AJ Styles and Nakamura in the Dream match as the main event of WrestleMania when it wasn't. There's going to be another match that's far bigger than whatever Jey Uso.
Yeah, I certainly don't think this precludes Punk and Cody facing off at Mania if they still choose to go that route.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't have a huge problem with this. I do remember moons ago getting dragged for a take that I had that Jey Uso was more over or had the ability to be more of a single star than either one of the Young Bucks. Do you remember that take,
I remember
Jeff?
That one, yeah.
Yes, oh boy. A lot of people weren't happy with me on that day, but where are they now? I'd love to see
them. They're not listening
back.
And they're trashing us in the Discord.
Oh, but and they're glad that they haven't.
No. Back to the news, just to put a bow on it. Lawyers for Janelle Grant filed a new amended lawsuit on January 31st with some new claims, as well as listing the names of people like Nick Khan, Brian Nurse, Brad Bloom, and Rich Herring, who were listed without names in the original suit. Another minor change, for whatever reason, Dave's words, was removing all references to Stephanie McMahon by name, but listing all the previous lawsuit notes that had her name, just without a specific name. It is unknown why this was done. I have some theories. But
what,
also,
what do you? What's your theory? You think they're maybe getting some help from Steph?
Possibly. I think that's it. But I think naming the officers in the suit as opposed to WWE employee number one, I think it's part of the spaghetti attempt, and it's one of those things where it's like, well, if we get shot down in court, then all of you know who the officers involved were, and you go after this company because look, I've been on record. I don't like the strategy of how much Ann Callis, I believe that's the name of the attorney, has been doing public media about this case. And that's the thing I was going to bring up about the press conferences. Old judges don't know internet. I've learned that over the years. They don't understand technology. They don't understand a lot. And so you don't also want to give a defense the chance to say, well, possibly these people were colluding to set up Triple H to say something on the record, blah, blah, blah. Oh, do you follow Brandon Thurston on Twitter? Well, case dismissed. That kind of thing. So if you really care about this case, you don't want to jeopardize by dumb wrestling content creators doing something at a press conference. Okay. That's all I'm saying. But nevertheless, I think naming the names is part of it. I think the added exhibits were to bring in, like, Michael Hayes is now named in it. I think it was to, you know, it's more for the emotional oomph of some of the charges, because a lot of the red lines are adding, for lack of a better term, very flowery language on some of the facts, and it also kind of wraps the bow on the SEC investigation as the paying cover up and why he didn't and Vince McMahon's relationship with the board. But yeah, for the most part, that's what I thought of the strategy here. The Stephanie thing, I think she's possibly allied with the planet, but doesn't want to go all the way there. But it might just be, this is the story of the woman, so we need to eliminate the other references to the other women in there to give her the focus. I don't know for a fact.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, I think the Michael Hayes thing is good, too, because once you start doing background on Michael Hayes, he is... That's just a smooth move, defense-wise.
Yeah. The other major lawsuit involving WWE, Vince McMahon and Linda McMahon, a class action suit with five unnamed ring boys from the 1980s suing the company alleging sexual abuse from working with the head of the ring crew, Mel Phillips, is back on. Suit has been on hold based on the constitutional challenge of the law that allowed it to be filed on February 3rd. The Maryland Supreme Court voted 4-3 that the state's Child Victims Act of 2023 was constitutional. Writing the majority opinion was Chief Justice Matthew J. Fader. Reason I bring that up is Matt Fader.
Fader time.
Matt Fader's a friend of mine. Matt Fader and I went to the University of Virginia together, both graduating in 1995. Matt Fader was the director of the Virginia Pep Band while I was there too. I know Matt Fader. I love Matt Fader's just a stand-up dude, and seeing his name in a news story just made me pleased. And yes, I am friends with the Chief Justice of the Maryland Supreme Court. and I talk about wrestling on a podcast. Our lives could not be more divergent.
Yeah, no, I have a few of those connections too, where I'm like, yeah, we played in a band together, and now he does this.
Yes, he went to Yale Law after UVA. I always thought he was going to run for president, and I had blackmail material on him ready to go. Last, it will not happen, but I am for this. This was kind of this original law was a favor to the Catholic Church by a lot of people, and saying you can't do a lawsuit 20 years after the fact. And yes, I am a little bit biased in that I do have a little sexual abuse in my past. I think I've talked about before on here. If I haven't, I'm not going to talk about it now, but nevertheless, I'm kind of happy with this. But I will also tell you, I don't think this does a damn thing to Linda McMahon's nomination for the Secretary of Education either.
No, I mean, if there was anything that even amounted to federal stuff, she would just get a pardon and we'd move on.
Well, this isn't even criminal either. This is civil, so it wouldn't.
Yeah. No, I know, right? Yeah, but I can't. Even if there was a criminal component to this, and if there was remotely federal, she'd just get a pardon. We move on. If she is wanted in the government by the top government official,
yes, she will get
placed in. Yeah. Yes, that person is not going to be concerned about legal affairs.
And also, I'm going to tell you, WWE has fantastic litigation insurance, because they've been sued over the years and whatnot. So if you think that all these lawsuits are going to somehow bankrupt the company, it's not. It's just going to increase their rates, and they're making so much money hand over fist, they're not even going to notice the deductible.
Yeah.
WWE Evolve will showcase in-ring action featuring rising WWE prospects as they look to become full-fledged WWE superstars. It's being announced on the Royal Rumble broadcast this past Saturday. So we have an NXT for NXT now. Gabe Sapolsky will be running the show down there, featuring various new talents. And in the teaser video, it looked like you had Wendy Chu down there, who might be doing some enhancement work for the kids and whatnot. I won't be watching this, but I think it's a interesting move in that it premieres March 5th on 8 p.m., 5 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Tubi, with a new episode dropping each week. There had been rumors of AEW shopping a streaming show to various platforms to kind of extend their reach, and this would seem to put Tubi out of reach for them.
Yeah, I guess so. Tubi, man, where do you find Tubi?
Tubi, I want to say Tubi is one of these joint streaming. I mean, it's an app on basically, that, you know,
yeah,
your Roku.
Like, I get that, like smart yeah, that's right. That, I know. I've seen it. It's just one that I don't use a ton.
All right, Tubi's owned by Fox.
Okay.
So, and I think that's God. I thought they used to have a arrangement with somebody else on the next day, but it's one of these things.
All these streaming services have turned me into a gross monopolist.
I'm going back to cable.
I just want one company to own all these channels. Damn it! I know it's bad for consumers. But I can't keep track, and I don't want to. I don't know what's on anything anymore. I hate it. I actually say this the other day. I pirate because I don't even know what's on the legal services anymore. It's just easier.
I'm just like, I just want one place to watch the six channels that I watch, and that's it. And maybe the local channels, because that's the real gimmick, is I can't get local channels if I just get, you know, certain other channels. And there are ways around it, and they're illegal, and I may know a thing or two about them.
I'm freely admitting it.
Danny Jordan on Twitter earlier today announced her retirement. She says, look, I'm just not mentally into it. I'm sad because I loved Danny Jordan's work when she was working as enhancement in AEW. I think it was during the pandemic era.
She's the strong one, right? Like the little small buff one?
No. She was the one who did the Mean Girls gimmick where she had the burn book. I thought that was fun. I thought they may sign her, but she went back to the indies and grinding, and she says, I'm kind of done with this. And like she told this story about how she did this match and she mentally wasn't in, and then she cut a promo, she wasn't mentally into it, and then she just decided, hey, time to go. So good on you, do it while you have your health. still young. But right. I do enjoy her. I did enjoy her shtick.
No, I like it. And, you know, I guess all I would say is to anyone who announces their retirement from anything in their 20s, unless it's, you know, a prohibitive injury, just don't. Just say you're taking a break.
Taking a break. I think that was mostly it. It was, I'm taking a break. I didn't mean to imply that she was.
Just mentally don't write yourself off like that, because you're going to have burnout. You know, if whatever your career is, whether it's music or entertainment, comedy, wrestling, whatever it is, you know, over 30 years, you're going to have burnout. The naive thing is to think that you're going to have this sustained energy and drive and passion for the thing every day of every year of your career. It's not like that. I mean, but, you know, it ebbs and flows, and you should definitely, when you're not feeling it, step back, because you're not going to psych yourself into feeling it if you're in a steady stream of not feeling it.
Yeah, as they say in comedy, you know, the comedy river's always there and it's always flowing. You can always come back to it if you want to it. And Chris is here to pull me back when I go over the where I misword or misspeak things like that. So I appreciate that. Other personnel things: Kevin Owens officially resigning with WWE. Sean Ross Sapp reporting that earlier this afternoon.
Big loss for AEW here. I think that AEW was real close to getting Kevin Owens away from WWE. He would have been a real big valuable asset to them, and it's a darn shame.
Signed a 5-year contract. 2, 3, 4. Duke Hudson, it was announced, was cut by WWE in January. He did a nice little Twitter thing where he's interviewing himself, being very self-deprecating, but it's one of those things where Triple H, quote-unquote, did not see him as a main roster talent. You may recall he got a little bit of a main roster run during the pandemic era when Paul E. was running the show, coming up as Brendan Vink, and he spent like 3 weeks in there, and Vince came back and said, "I don't see it," and sent him back down to NXT, but as stated by other people who know wrestling better than I do, one of the best hot tags in NXT in terms of his performance and stuff, but he's in his mid-30s. I really enjoyed it. I still think Chase Yu is a moneymaker, at least for a short time on the main roster with T-shirts and stuff like that, and I'm a big fan of getting paid. I wish he had gotten that shot.
Yeah, I think Chase Yu is perfect for SmackDown in their, you know, middle of the pack tag team thing.
Wyatt's six. You can just fight for them forever for like 30 years and do it that way.
Oh, and like, I mean, I think they, you know, obviously Andre Chase, I think, is both a talented hot tag and obviously a very entertaining promo.
Yeah.
And entertaining character as well. I think Duke Hudson, I think the schmarmy character that they like kind of like just lazily settled in on towards the end was lame. They should have had him full redemption into True Believer.
Yes.
He needed to be the most true believer at the end, and like the most heartbroken and everything.
You can't do a redemption story and then just kind of half-ass it with, it was all right, but we're moving on type of a thing. Make him fully redeem, make him buy in, and then he would have been mad over as a babyface. I think part of the reason people didn't get hugely behind him was they didn't trust that he was being sincere.
Right, yeah, and like that, they even were still playing with that with the Ridge Holland thing, and like Ridge was still like trying to like appeal to. Well, there's essentially what we still see is the audience, that there's something not quite consistent about Duke Hudson, that he's still venal and he still has these tendencies that are annoying.
Charlotte Flair divorced Andrade, it was announced on Monday. I got nothing further for that, but...
Big loss for AEW.
Big loss for AEW. he went back to WWE to try and patch things up. And breaking news, Bear Boulder has been fired by AEW. The company learned that he had been arrested for spousal battery by strangulation in January and cut him from the company.
No big loss for AEW.
No big loss for AEW. God.
Jesus.
That'll end the news segment. Now for the lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we watched, whatever we had time for, starting with ice cold takes on the Rumble. I thought it was kind of mid until the second half of the men's Rumble, and then it got very, very interesting. The women's thing, it was okay. Positives for me were both Liv Morgan and Bayley just absolutely getting crushed by people to put them over. I thought good on them. Liv Morgan, especially, out of the, four people who have that knee strike to them, I think three of them don't really know how to do it. So she took them from, Julia, from Sonya, from Shayna, and I think also from Zoe Stark. So
I think Liv has really improved over the last year. I think she is a very complete package. Her 1 week point remains a little bit of the in-ring work, but God, her character work is good. Her promo work solid. I thought she was working hard here in this match too. I had the same thought, even though like once Charlotte came out, I was like, well, here we go.
Well, Charlotte was announced, but notable surprises. Jordynne Grace, now fully on the WWE contract. Alexa Bliss back. Oh shit! I just said Alexa, and my thing goes off again. It was leaked to the wrestling media that they couldn't come to a deal, and then she showed up, and then they brought it up on commentary. Sean Ross Sapp further reporting that this was kind of a 12th hour deal, and that she replaced Shotzi in the Rumble, but they just kind of used it as a spike the football thing on internet rumors, et cetera, et cetera. Trish Stratus appearing I don't think there. Oh, and Nikki Bella at number 30. It was okay. It wasn't bad, but it really didn't move me, and nothing, you know, horribly shocking, because Charlotte came back, and we'll go into her promos on Monday and Tuesday when we get further down the Lazy River. The tag team match, 2 out of 3 falls, kind of fell flat. In my opinion, it felt like we're going to try and do this match, and they worked hard, but nobody really got into it. And I think they were missing something, as opposed to kind of doing a WWE style match. They kind of did a shout out to the indies. I think I don't know why it didn't work. I thought it was going to be better than it was. And I think maybe it just wasn't, you know, work on a limb and have, you know, somebody struggle to get a hot tag type of a tag match. What did you think of this?
You were really excited about it.
I fell asleep during it. That's
I know. And it got me excited for it. And then real quickly, I just realized in the presentation.
Yeah.
Oh, we're not really committed to this as the centerpiece work rate match of the show. Like, this could have been the show needs to have one traditional match on it, one that really kind of scratches and satisfies the itches of, you know, wrestling purists, and this would be that good well-worked match for the wrestling purists. But WWE is perfectly content with Royal Rumble, and we just need to take this away now. Yeah. They are perfectly content with Royal Rumble being Royal Rumble, and the assumption that you're here at the Royal Rumble show, or you're watching the Royal Rumble show to see the Royal Rumble, and that's all they care about.
The melodrama works, as we saw in the Cody Rhodes, Kevin Owens ladder match, which, look, I don't like ladder matches. I thought this one was good. I think I don't know what I was expecting.
Expecting a higher level presentation where this was more of a structural wall to the Royal Rumble show, right?
Yes.
Like in another pay-per-view, this match would need to deliver at a different stimulative level. And what I very much come around to is this idea that they just don't view any other match on the Royal Rumble pay-per-view as standing on its own merits. Like, for example, if this Cody and Kevin Owens thing was on a September pay-per-view or something like that, it would have gotten a lot more attention, and there would have been a little more dramatics to it. Whereas I thought the finishing stuff was pretty ho-hum. I mean, you know, Sammy coming out and stuff at the end, it didn't have the emotional resonance that it might on another show where they were focusing in on the value of the match.
Yeah, I agree. And I think they may have needed to pay off Sammy a little bit harder. In terms of that he actually may have thought about helping Kevin Owens in the match. Because all he did was look, and it was very subtle. And I was like, well, WWE doesn't play subtlety well. They are the melodrama factory. They are the cutting promos in the middle of a match type of thing. And so it was like one of those things. And then we get to the Men's Rumble. Again, the first half I was finding meh. I was just like, whatever. This is a terrible time. I even typed. I go, this is this is, and I wrote you. I went, this match stinks, kind of. When is it going to pick up? And then after about 15, it started to. Surprises, yes, Joe Hendry came out, but not to eliminate Ethan Page, who was not in this. No, he just kind of gets, he does his shtick and he gets booted. TNA champ. There you go, kids. Yeah. What was the other surprises? We had, I mean, not many per se. You know, I liked Logan Paul in it. There was rumors coming out that Drew McIntyre was very upset because LA Knight was working a battle royal style and was continuing to go while the focus should have been on other people. Okay, I kind of, you know, I get it. I mean, it's a valid complaint, but I rewatched it. I went, well, I mean, LA Knight's just kind of, he doesn't want to stand around and watch while at the thing, which is what happens in a lot of these Royal Rumbles, become everybody else watch what's happening and then go back to the action type of a thing. So I
would defend him, and I would just submit that part of the problem and why these things become boring is this should be a feast for the eyes. What's happening over there? What's happening over there? What's happening over there? And at key moments where you want to make sure everyone's audience focus is focused in on a key beat, okay, everyone ramps down. You might even just have somebody say, cool it. And everyone knows to kind of like chill it out a little bit so we can focus in on Jey Uso hitting so-and-so or whatever. But after that, I want it to be chaos. Yeah. That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, and become set pieces, and it's fine. And the set pieces were very nice. Don't get me wrong. I mean, all the eliminations and the aftermath of it were very satisfying in that second half of the men's Royal Rumble. I brought up, other people were going, this is one of the best Royal Rumbles ever. I was like, eh, slow down. I still judge that first half as dull as dishwater for me.
Nothing's ever going to touch 92, right?
No, I don't think so. Because the stakes were so high. The roster was just a who's who of wrestling history.
Great story.
Yeah, the story was a little bit off here because we needed the swerve. I mean, they tried hard. Like, John Cena was great in this in terms of his, you know, in terms of me thinking that, man, I can't believe they're going to give this to Cena. Wait, hold on. I did not have Jey Uso on my bingo card at all winning this show. But then you step back a half step and go, all right, it kind of makes sense. They were doing the whole Gunther storyline on Saturday Night's Main Event, and they're connecting all these things. But
For me, it's a little too clever by half in the sense of I just think Jey Uso is not going to be the final biggest match of WrestleMania, and you can't do it. And so, like, this is all cute, but, like, he's just not that guy. Let's stop. The money match for WrestleMania remains Punk versus Cody. The money story for WrestleMania remains Punk versus Cody.
I think so too.
And I think you can still have Jey Uso face off against Walter in the sub main event, or a, you know, like two main, you know, two events down world title match. That's a classic. You know, it's Macho Man and Steamboat potential, but that's not the main event of that show.
Yeah, I think Punk's getting inserted in Jey Uso and Gunther storyline so that Cena can face Cody. Even though I think Cody and Punk is the better story, I don't know. I mean, there's still mysteries to be solved here. So, and a lot of piece. And we saw from last year, they moved a lot of pieces around. So,
I mean, an interesting story coming into the next year is Punk's the world champion, Cody's the WWE champion, and we have a slow build to a title versus title match between these two.
Yeah, that's true too. Going to Raw. You know, as good as Jey Uso's emotional promo was, because he came out there and he knew what he was going to say, I have no idea what that Charlotte Flair thing was all about. I don't know if she said, I don't know if she did either. And I don't know if it was, I'm going to go out there and read the crowd and go with it, or I'm not doing the babyface thing effective enough. And also her delivery, every promo she does is yelling. It's yelling. It's not really emoting. It's yelling at people. And so she can't have any emotion in her voice because she doesn't use, it's a microphone meant to amplify your voice. You don't need to shout. You can speak into it and it should be okay. And we can adjust the levels here. But as it went on, I was like, it almost felt like one of those Alexa Bliss promos where she'd come out and be very, very grateful, and then all of a sudden turn on a dime, and everybody would be like, "Ah, why'd you do that? Why'd you set us up for? Why'd you do the swerve, Vince, when we all wanted to like her at this time?" Here she's kind of like, I work so hard and I deserve this and I'm the flair. And so she's doing like both babyface and heel points. And they're saying woo and boo and she's confused by it. And then Rhea comes out and she's a heel. So.
Right. I don't think people really quite knew what to make of Charlotte on this first one, this first promo. And
Tuesday didn't help either.
Tuesday didn't either. It almost felt like they sent her out there to do trial balloons. And
yes.
Just let's see where everyone's feeling about you. And the answer is they all feel you as a heel.
Are they going to cheer for your big title victory? Probably not. So mention it and see what they think. Yeah, I
think it's very silly that they thought that juxtaposed against Rhea Ripley, Charlotte Flair had any chance whatsoever being perceived as the baby face.
I think she knew it too.
I know. I think she was probably confused with, you guys really want me to go over there and try to get over with everyone knowing full well I'm about to challenge Rhea Ripley?
Let's see if we can get this 50-50, kid. Go out there and talk about how much you miss the fans and you rehab your knees.
The money in the build is this to be really 50-50.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. Your turn, sir.
Okay, let's go back around to Kevin Owens here. I hated this Kevin Owens attack on Sami Zayn at the
really?
End of Raw. Yes. Okay. I absolutely would not have turned Kevin on Sammy yet. I'd still have Kevin trying to pour poison into Sammy's ear. I think the intrigue with the Sami Zayn character right now was in the will he or won't he. And now we've basically removed a lot of that with Kevin Owens attacking him. I like the idea of a moral tug of war at Sami Zayn. Your goals versus your morals versus your friends. And all of those things were actually at a nice tension point, and Kevin Owens attacking him upsets the delicate balance that had been struck.
I understand that, and I do that with the caveat that Sammy, I think there was a tacit understanding between KO and Sammy that Sammy was going to help, and then Sammy didn't, so KO is still a rage monkey going around throwing temper tantrums.
Where was the tacit understanding?
I don't think there was a tacit understanding. I'm wrong on that. But
yeah, yeah. I mean, Kevin Owens might have implied, like it might have been implicit, but it was never tacit.
No, that's true. You're correct on that. I will back off. But I think just the rage part is what they're trying to get over here, and that he's out of control, even with his friends. Whatever. I don't know. I think they'll save it on Friday.
Yeah, I hope.
You want to go again? Because I have a kind of lengthy one about AEW, so go ahead.
Okay. Well, then I, in advance of stepping aside for AEW, I'll throw out an NXT one here. Every time Metaphor has a match and I'm watching this, they're just like the Unholy Union versus Metaphor. This is not a good match, man. This is another drag fest. I don't know what they're doing with the coaching in the women's tag team division right now down in NXT, but it needs a massive overhaul. It's, you know, obviously some of these imported talents from other places like Stephanie Vaquer, you know, been around, has traveled and wrestled in other divisions, even Shotzi. Having that experience, you just see this night and day versus the homegrowns. And if Kaylee Ray can't carry the Metaphor to a good match, who can?
I'm with you there, and I'm also just really pro going in there and going, all right, we need to stop the choreography and just learn the basics of wrestling. And again, I've pushed this before, you have the access to all the 1980s territory wrestling in there. Put on an Anderson's versus Rock and Roll Express match and teach Lash and Jakara how to work an arm for 15 minutes. I know it's not the most exciting thing, but it's the best for storytelling. And then once you get the storytelling of working a limb or something like that to force people to be emotionally invested for them to then hit the hot tag, then you can do all the athletic ideas and indie style and whatever you have plan type stuff. It's one of those things where we're teaching them how to run and then going, well, you don't know how to walk well a lot of times. And I think I'm always a take half a step back to move three steps forward guy when it comes to wrestling. It's one of these things where you watch and you can see the agility drills that they're doing, you know, running back and forth and back and forth and hop over this and do a somersault here. And it's like, just make it about wrestling.
You know what was funny is that match, which we both remember was a couple of weeks ago. I was looking at the wrong NXT recap.
Gotcha. But
it feels like we've been watching this match every week. This week, our version of this match was the Gigi Dolin and Tatum Paxley versus Sol Ruka and Zarya match, which was better work, but these just continue to be these flavorless tag team matches.
I am so full of wrestling that I forgot that we were talking about the wrong match. I didn't have it on my...
And I looked at it and I was like, yeah, I guess I did watch that this week. Because
the Discord is going to be on us about that one.
Oh, well, then that means they actually listen to the show. Good for them.
They'll hate listen when I put the clicks that I go after the VOW Discord.
You know what's good is even if you catch it while you're doing the show, that's still not good enough. Like, I was supposed to circle back and edit that take out. Sorry I brought up the wrong slate. All right.
I went with you, so it's my fault too.
Lexus King continues to be an absolutely insipid character. The most interesting thing about him is the goofy facial hair, and that's not interesting. It's just goofy. And then out came Fandango.
Wait, that was Fandango? I thought that was Daniel Garcia.
No, that's... it's Fandango with none of the flavor.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's no.
That was Diet Dango.
Diet Dango. Oh, I miss Tyler Breeze with him so
much. I mean, that was if you watch that, which we did, which I did at least. Like the whole kind of crux of what Lexus King was doing was making fun of, you know, like Tyler Breeze and all of the dancing and stuff. And yes, his new name is JDC, which is just you know, a name. It's a name. Like, when he came out as Fandango, he was like, that music means a lot to me, which actually made me laugh, too.
I was like, really? Does it? What does it mean to you?
Well,
mean the one big win against Chris Jericho at WrestleMania? Well, maybe. Yeah. Okay, cool.
That time you and Summer Rae were insanely over and the company just absolutely nerfed you about a decade ago?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but I do like him personally. I think he's, you know.
I loved that act. I thought that was a good act.
It was such a weird, but it towed that line of strange meta, kind of, where it's like, yeah, wrestling doesn't really matter. I'm just going to go out there and dance for a while. Yeah,
but Summer ruled.
Yes.
In her, yeah, she was really good. She was a really good character. And, you know, Johnny, for his part, I thought did good stuff. I thought he was good.
AEW was weird in terms of the booking. And if you want to hear a thorough deconstruction of this, the Dynamite show on Fight Game Media, I do that on Wednesdays. But the booking of this made no sense in terms of, okay, we have Kenny and we have Ospreay. And boy, what a dynamic promo by Kenny on that show.
Oh, boy. Kenny. Jeez. Kenny is just white hot.
He is doing Nakamura. I'm sorry. He's doing... Everybody complained about Nakamura going surfing. Kenny comes out here dressed like he just came off the couch. There's no pizzazz to it. Hey, guys. We have a match in 2 weeks in Brisbane. Here's my catchphrase. I guess I'll do it. And then he forgets that, oh, by the way, he had wrestled 2 weeks ago against Brian Cage, so it's not his re-debut in the ring or AEW. But they're fighting Fletcher and Takeshita. And who do we book Takeshita and Fletcher against on this show? against the Buddy Murphy or Buddy Matthews, Brody King team that's fighting for the tag team championships. So we have to figure out a way out of this. And how do we do this? Well, because the reason this was booked is because it'll be a banger. It'll be a 4-star. Dave will love it until we get to the ending where we decide we're going to have Rainmaker Okada come out and distract the highly focused on his match Buddy, because they're facing Grand Slam in Brisbane. And it's just one of those things where it's like, keep everybody apart from each other that's having a big match. For God's sake, what are you? You don't need to show this match right now. It's not needed. You're not helping anybody, and you're not building.
And you might want to go to this match down the line, and yes, now you've already done it.
Yes, that was the
very the very logic that this would be a banger 4-star match is the very logic to not do it.
Yes. Do it when it actually means something and you can go all out as opposed to doing the screw job ending. But it's the guys that he grew up with who are like, I watch wrestling for wrestling and as opposed to build it. I get that criticism, but you have a big show that you're trying to push people to that people have relatively no interest in, especially the people in Brisbane who this was originally a pay-per-view level show and is now a 2-hour collision pretty much for them. The drama is in keeping people apart and building the heat in it. The drama is not in, oh, I'm so mad at Okada for playing his music and distracting Buddy Matthews and ruining this match that I was going to give a good star rating to. I just could not believe that.
And I will say that I thought that those shows had more promos than in recent weeks, so it's at least a slight step in the right direction on that front. But we continue to get to these matches that either are, as you were just describing, matches that don't need to be happening right now, or competitive matches that are way too long that I don't give a shit about. Mark Dunkzilla Davis versus Will Ospreay. I do not think Mark Davis has a chance of beating Will Ospreay. And bluntly, if he's out there as a hired gun against Will, the match should be basically Mark Dunkzilla Davis is going at a breakneck pace to try to kill Will Ospreay, and he loses the match after making a rage-based error.
That's okay. I'll let you finish, and then I'll go into my point about it. I'm sorry.
A lot of these times, we are watching these matches that are just the generic 50-50, you get your shit in, I get my shit in, let's make sure we all look good. And then we go down, Excalibur at the end goes, God, Mark Davis fought like a banshee tonight. I don't care. That's not the point of wrestling.
This was a story match. And the story they're telling was bad. Because last we saw Mark Davis, he was fighting against the Callis family on behalf of Will.
Now they did put a couple of subtle plot beats in that match where he was slightly frustrated with the tag team rhythm of him and Will Ospreay to give AEW slight credit. Now, you didn't see any of that in the recap, but I do watch the show.
Well, no, but in this match, it's all about, and I think they were playing this because they put a button on it after the match where Kenny Omega comes out and mentions Mark Davis having to work for the Callis family now. But all they did for this match was Davis gives Don Callis a brief look as he goes down to the ring.
Well, does he work for them, or is he being like extracted by them?
That's the story they told on commentary, was that because Don Callis had signed Kyle Fletcher to a deal while Davis was injured, he now owns him too. Which is a retcon back there, but Will Ospreay does this for a moment. He grabs his head and goes, oh my God. And we don't ever play it again. We then play it as just a straight up wrestling match, as opposed to being a hired gun trying to hurt Will Ospreay, or Will Ospreay being morally conflicted that he has to hurt his friend. It's just a match and we're just going through the motions. La-di-freaking-da.
Yeah, again, is he a willing hired gun or an unwilling hired gun? That needs to be played out in this match. You have to choose a lane on that. I think the retcon of, oh, he got bought out by Kyle Fletcher. Well, that doesn't explain anything.
Oh, well, they were a team, so when Callis signed Fletcher, he had signed Aussie Open the whole time.
That doesn't explain Davis's emotional state, is my point.
Exactly, but there was no emotion in this match either, which sucked. Yeah.
Right, and so it's just like a lot of times the big matches don't actually tell a story that's particularly interesting.
Chris, I don't watch wrestling for community theater. I watch it for wrestling.
Okay.
It's part of the whole package, guys.
You watch an effing soap opera, kid. Like, that's all I have to say.
No, I watch it for the athletic purity so that my friends and I can compare star ratings. That's why I watch wrestling. God. Yeah, there has to be a little bit of drama in there to hook the audience in emotionally. I'm sorry. And it's not going to happen with a good, fluid match. You need to tell the story you were telling on the TV show.
I'm gonna go further. I'm gonna pick that up with Queen Amanada versus Tony Storm. Okay. This was closer to a story style match, except that Tony didn't. She dressed up like Mariah May and she did many Mariah May-isms, but she failed to have the Mariah May match.
Yes,
which is the most important part of this. It's not just do her pose and her finisher. You need to even do selling like Mariah May.
Yes.
You need to do the move set of Mariah May. The whole thing. Like the true performance is every single move. And then maybe even getting up after she does each one of Mariah May's individual signature spots, like the way Mariah, and getting up and taking a round of applause afterwards, sort of aping in her performance a little bit. And then Mariah May, for her part, last week, great promo, right?
Yeah.
This week, I thought she was an absolute dud on commentary.
I liked the slow burn after the match. I'm going to also mention, it looks like Queen Amanada has lost every bit of confidence she has. Like, there was that run when she was like going in between ROH and AEW where she was having kind of banger matches and she was chopping the hell out of people. And I was kind of a little bit excited about it. But she had, she sold it for the entrance, and then once the bell rang,
I'll give her credit. I think she was very confused on how to work this match. Are you working as a heel against Tony Storm, or are you working as a babyface against Mariah May?
Okay. I'll buy that one.
I would actually say, like, she might be having other issues and that might be a problem in other things, but I think that this is another problem with this match of, okay, if we're doing this, I think if we're doing this, you have to have Tony in there against a clear jobber heel.
Yes.
Just some annoying, snotty, girl who doesn't want to wrestle against Mariah May.
And it's weird because we have all that backstory, and then we decide to hook in the backstory of the jacket of Swerve, which he wore at a pay-per-view once. That is Jimmy Rave's jacket, I think. They explained it on a pay-per-view like 2 years ago, and we're trying to get the emotional connection here for the Ricochet feud with the scissors and stuff. And I'm just like, you need to explain the jacket a little more. If it's that important, I'm sorry. You do have to hammer that for those of us who don't remember 2.5 years ago.
This is a guy who lost his house and he's over it. So you need to make this jacket really matter. He lost his child at home, Jeff, and he's okay. So this jacket has to really matter now.
But overall, if I had one thing to really, really state about that show is, and this is odd coming from me, too much comedy on AEW, especially when you're trying to get Hangman over, as I just, they start that interview and they go, do you regret what you did? No. He should regret what he did to Chris Daniels. It would actually move people to see that he's somehow struggling internally with what he thought he had to do with Christopher Daniels. And instead we get into a Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner match with Max friggin' Caster, whose only job is to get beat up on various shows, and his stupid open contract. He got beat up by Roosh on Collision. It was glorious, you know, just for the 1-2-3. But here comes Hangman Adam Page, who we are supposed to think is some sort of main eventer or heir to possibly take this AEW title. And he's talking about riding in a car with Max Caster and chasing him through the arena, and then a weird look with Max and moving on. And it's Chicken and Peter Griffin type stuff. And I was just like, what are you doing to this guy?
Yeah, no, Max Caster at one point actually felt like he had some star power a few years ago, and now he very much feels like comic relief and just this mid-card goober. It's so strange how the aura is completely off of him.
And putting him with Hangman Page, who's supposed to have a main event aura, and it's dragging him down.
Yeah, it's not helping either one of them. It's a bad pairing, but this Hangman character is a bad character.
But Dustin Rhodes is awesome. Dustin Rhodes came out there, cut two promos on the night, showed the kids how it was done, and said, good night, everybody.
I know. It made me very excited for when he goes back to WWE and repairs with Cody. Like the Cody and Dustin promo is going to be big money. And,
it's not happening. Weird... He says he signed his last contract with AEW. He just did that a few weeks ago.
He says he's in the last contract with AEW. But like this whole, I mean... Right down MJF bringing up his little brother. I just have this very hard time believing that he's never going to go back and work with his little brother in some capacity.
Yeah, that rankled a few people it's my rule. You don't mention the people on the other show because people will then go to the show, but he could have mentioned them kind of in a different way and it would have worked like, you know, you're in the, like, and that's why your little brother had to leave or something like that in terms of burying him on the way out.
Oh, I loved that line. I thought it was a delicious roast of Dustin. You might argue it was bad business or whatever, but like in terms of like, what a great burn. Oh, it was a wonderful burn, but it also made me very much daydream a little bit about him going back to WWE for one last run and being able to retire on his terms as an actual legendary wrestler, which he is.
I have nothing else to say. Do you have any other hits? Do you want to go back to NXT and say something about that?
Man, you know, Kalani Jordan as a heel, it's like we've now overcooked this.
You want her babyface again.
No. It's that like, okay, that
too everything, hard.
Yeah, everything at the end of this Carbon Petrovic thing was bad. Like,
yes.
Ashanti the Adonis absolutely should be, no, he shouldn't be hitting Kalani Jordan to get her offer, but the first time they get her offer, he should throw himself on top of his girlfriend to try to stop her from getting hurt a second time. That's a thing that you would do if you actually cared about your partner. So I thought that, like, that came off as lame. The Carmen Petrovic and Ashanti the Adonis story continues to be lame. But man, if you want to get over or even just get the audience to bite notionally that these two give a shit about each other, he's got to be willing to put himself in the way of in harm's way to protect his girlfriend. We need to see that. We need to see that he's actually a gentleman here. That would have been a nice opportunity. Conversely, I thought. Carmen Petrovic was also a really terrible opponent for Kalani Jordan here,
yes,
in the sense that, like, one, we're trying to get her over as this martial arts killer. Two, having her tap out, and she tapped out in relatively short order. She needed to pass out is what needed to happen here. She's a warrior. She is, you know, a martial arts warrior, and she needed to pass out warrior spirit style. Tapping out, I think, actually really hurts her aura. She needed to hang on there and fight Kalani brutally. And if you want Kalani to get it more and more vicious, there's a great opportunity. We see the warrior spirit of Carmen Petrovic, and we get that over. And then we also get over that Kalani's willing to go to new extremes to win this match. Bad finish.
I lied. I do have another point, and it's NXT, so we'll stay in the neighborhood. I don't care if it is a Native American doing it. It is bad taste to whip somebody, especially an African American, during Black History Month. Don't do it. We can stay away from it. We can think of other things. But yes.
And by the way, it doesn't help to conflate the strap with your heritage. In fact, it hurts. Yes. In fact, it's a bad idea and you shouldn't do it.
Like, where is the person to step in and...
with a very large wooden cross?
God. This is Adam Cole wearing the crown of thorns on Good Friday level of what the hell are you doing type of stuff. Do you remember that one?
Yes, but like honestly, now you're finally joined this bandwagon with me that the Eddie Thorpe presentation continues to get more and more problematic. Like, They had a perfectly fine, not problematic character, and they've managed to, week in, week out, make it worse and more problematic.
Stop digging. That's all I ask.
Stop digging. Oh, my God.
The hole is big enough. Stop digging, for God's sake.
Stop. He's already dead.
The gimmick's already dead, and I liked his character, and I liked the heritage.
I did, too. I liked... What's he settled in on, like, slightly bitter because, you know, he comes from a minority group, but it's not, like, the overarching thing. And, like, really what he's pissed off about is management and not getting a fair shot, and he's willing to manipulate and screw people over and be crafty and, use ingenuity to get himself into opportunistic situations. That was a great character. That
he's
was
gonna
a
say
good
DEI
character.
In a promo, isn't he?
he's gonna demand for like a diversity initiative or some shit. Yeah, it's gonna be like NXT has a diversity problem, and I'm going to be like, no, and I'm gonna like walk out of the kitchen.
You have Oba Femi and Trick Williams. Well, my people were more oppressed. I'm seeing it and I'm hating it because Shawn Michaels should not be writing that kind of stuff either.
No, I know, right? Like.
God. Okay.
But maybe we figured out the culprit for why this Eddie Thorpe gimmick seems to get worse and worse every week is that Shawn Michaels is writing it.
Yes. Just stop. Stop digging. Stop. Vader Club time.
Vader Club.
Set us up here.
So, this week I wanted to just change gears, do a little different thing for the palette. And I went back to two of my favorite wrestlers and a feud that I do enjoy, even though it's smack dab in the middle of the WCW versus NWO war, which sometimes results in these matches not being as good as they could be if it was just a straight up narrative where Paige and Savage just hated the shit out of each other. But I love the way these two guys work together. Macho clearly seems to be very engaged whenever he works with Paige. And Paige, for his part, I think whenever you go back and you watch his matches, there's a lot of depth to Diamond Dallas's Paige's wrestling style. It's hard to fully capture in one word what Paige does in terms of a style. And I find that fun. Like in this match, I thought him going off of the top, like springboarding onto the top turnbuckle to hit Paige or hit Savage with a clothesline was not a move I was expecting to see Diamond Dallas Paige do.
Yeah, it's not exactly unathletic. But it's not exactly athletic either. And he's so tall. And he wants it's tough. I mean, he does have a little street fighter in him. But it's also the guy who wants to be very athletic, but doesn't quite have that. The reach exceeds his grasp on his athleticism. So it's sloppy, but it looks awesome because he's throwing his body so hard into it that he's looks like it's fighting.
And it really serves his character too. Like this is a thing where it's almost the slop to his technique, I think really serves with the rib injury and everything, really serves this fighting from underneath, doing anything it takes to win within the margins rather than just overtly cheating. I just really enjoy Diamond Dallas Page. And for my money, I'll say it until I am dead. The Diamond Cutter is just a more entertaining move to me than the RKO. There have been some really good RKOs, but I always just enjoy how the Diamond Cutter arrives in those in matches. It's like he has so many different ways to get there, and they feel a little bit more out of nowhere and more earned. when they occur rather than show pieces.
Yeah, Page was an acquired taste for me because I first saw him when he was with AWA, and I loved him in AWA. Not as a wrestler, but as a manager, and he's doing the good God. And, you've watched enough AWA tapes to know, and he had the diamond exchange and was bad company, and Kurt Hennig was there for a short time. I think Medusa was in there. He had kind of a rotating.
The Diamond Stud.
Well, no, Colonel De Beers was in there for a short time. Diamond Stud was only a WCW creation. Yeah. And then he came to be a wrestler, and it's like, oh, he's okay. And this was when I was in my message board work rate thing. So, you're watching and you go, I really like that he's trying. I just wish they were telling the underdog story with a younger guy to push as opposed to an older guy who was Eric Bischoff's neighbor. And that's what I would get in my ear all the time is how, oh, he's just getting a push because he's Eric Bischoff's neighbor. And really it undercuts how good he is. Because he really is quite good, and he gets emotional response, and the diamond cutter works and things.
We talked about Jey Uso earlier in the show, and I think there's actually a really interesting comparison to Jey Uso and Diamond Dallas Page in this run here. I DDP better, but it's about the crowd connection. People wanted to see this guy fight from under, and the other thing that's happening that we aren't talking about in Vader Club at this time is he is having weekly TV matches where he is very actively selling the ribs and the rib injury, and all of his matches feel like this. He has this weak spot. He might be in there against a lesser opponent, but that lesser opponent can take advantage. Jerry Flynn might be able to hit him with some kicks to the midsection that could really, jack him up here. Whoever he's in the ring with this week.
No, I agree with that. Buffer is just in his bag for the intro on this.
God love this man for making so much money off of what is ostensibly
doing so little,
like the most glorified nothing in the world.
God, he was such a big deal when I was growing up in boxing too, and you'd watch this and they go, this, it's like, it was like
getting him was like a big deal.
It was a great idea, and then they just run it in the ground every friggin' pay-per-view. Look, I love lights out matches, and there's a part of me that absolutely adores the Spike Savage just pile drivers a referee because there's no DQ. And part of me goes, yeah, F it. I can't do anything to you in this match.
I love that. God love Mickey J for just wanting to get pile driven in his own hometown.
It's his hometown. Yeah.
Yeah. That was.
is Dusty the best bad announcer or the worst good announcer?
I don't know. But another good sub match inside of this match was Bobby the Brain Heenan versus Dusty Rhodes on commentary, where Bobby is trying to explain why Dusty's psychology is, because Bobby's working as a face at this point, and Dusty's misreading the situation.
Yes.
And Bobby's trying to explain it to him
because Bobby hates the NWO. So, but Dusty's hasn't been entertaining joining the NWO. I think that was kind of a flash thing at one point, but it's one of those things where you watch it back, it's kind of like Dusty's asking Bobby how to be a heel and Bobby's not telling him. That Brain, when you were managing people, what kind of advice would you give him to win a lights out kind of match? What kind of pain would you put people through? Bobby's just like, I don't like the NWO.
I want Diamond Dallas Page to do anything necessary to beat Randy Savage.
Yes, it's kind of amazing. The ending to this match sucked.
Oh my God. Jeez. Scott Hall comes out here, just stinks up the joint.
This actually, I think, might have been the match where I stopped watching wrestling for a while because I remember I was watching this pay-per-view with friends, and I really another possible Vader Club match on this show is Chris Benoit versus Ming, and it is the most Chris Benoit versus Ming match you could ever think of. It is manly and hose-worthy. Let's put it that way.
I remember that match. That would be a fun one to go back to.
And then it's the tag match with Hogan and Piper versus Nash and Hall, and then it's Savage versus DDP, where the NWO once again gets a leg up on it, and you're just like, Heat, heat, heat. It were Dallas Page.
Doing this at pay-per-views, right? Like, you have Scott Hall come out, right? But someone else from WCW's side comes out and stops Scott Hall.
Yes.
Like, they make the save. And that sets up Scott Hall's next feud, and then Page and Savage can go on. I mean, I was actually – it's funny because it's like other weird, dumb WCW-isms. Elizabeth is helping Macho cheat, and Kimberly is just still like,
yes,
and like she should be doing something because it's a no disqualification match.
Yeah, just use the
I don't need her to have a cat fight with Liz. That's Jerry Lawler crap. I just need her to help her husband win the match.
All the referees getting a spot in this match between him, Mark Curtis, Nick Patrick, who I think we need a redemption tour for Nick Patrick. I'm one of those people who did not mind when he did the heel ref shtick, because I had seen it before in WWF, and you know, it's fine with Danny Davis and whatnot. But people seem to just hate his work in general.
I think his work is good. I think his work is good.
Yeah, I have no problem with Nick Patrick.
He's a good ref. Like at WCW with like Mark Curtis and Mickey J and Nick Patrick, they had a lot of really fun referees back in the day. I always love me some Mark Curtis.
Who's the other one in addition to Hildebrand / Curtis? It was the other short guy with the mustache whose name I can't remember right now.
Is that not Mark Curtis with the mustache?
No. There's two of them though.
Oh, okay.
And I can't remember the name of the other one, so people are shouting at whatever they're listening to this on. But we'll think about it later.
Yeah. But yeah, like I mean, they had a lot of. I thought WCW's referees were fine and entertaining, and also like perfect casts in the sense that they all sort of had personalities, but didn't have like overarching personalities. And I get why people don't care for Nick Patrick, but so much of that's just in the execution of the storyline. Right. Like, actually, I mean. For example, I think if you did a thing where you have a referee who's crooked, you know, a la the NBA guy, Donaghy, back in the day,
yes.
And basically what ends up happening is that there's lots of key plot points where he's officiating matches and we like look back 6 months later and go, oh, that happened because he was crooked. Oh, that happened because he's crooked. Oh, that happened because he's crooked. Like that is a much more interesting story than he's a crooked referee in the pocket of the champion, because that's so obvious and it beggars belief. Even in a world where people take steel chair shots to the head all the time.
Like, if the things people complain Rick Knox for supposedly being inept about turned into him turning into the Young Bucks personal referee, which I always thought they were going to do at one point, I'd be here for it.
Or even if Rick Knox is betting on the matches.
That's true, too. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like just some sort of thing where he's profiting off of the blown calls.
Well, I have my Vader Club pick for next week. I'm going to continue in the Mako Satomura stuff. It's going to be Mako Satomura versus Io Shirai. It's a fantastic match. It's really good. I apologize for not getting this one out, but I was a bit in my feels and also a bit busy at work. This has been Shake Them Ropes. You can follow me on X at CrapGame13. You can follow Just the Show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. I also do a show over on Fight Game Media on Wednesdays, 20 minutes after Dynamite goes off the air. Paul Fontaine and myself live on YouTube. It's called The Dynamite Show. Not very creative, but it also drops in your podcatchers for free on the next Thursday morning. Chris is going to plug his stuff now.
I have guitar lessons and music lessons that I teach. You can hit me up. And on Instagram, Dr. Nov, DOCTOR_NOV.
I forgot that. I'm sorry.
That's quite all right. Hit me up. Also, please follow on Spotify as well. I have music up there, so I would love it if you do that.
See you next week, kids, and we'll be in a better mood. Hey, kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling, too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that, too. Love for you to give us a listen if you haven't already. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network.
Yeah, sure thing. Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.